Supported by the Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in Roxbury, former site of the Public Lounge just a few years ago, and the former site of Roxbury's original grain mill and blacksmith shop 100 years ago. The new Old Mill Restaurant's decor will feature the original mill machinery and blacksmith artifacts, and be open every day for dinner, private parties, community events, and streamside dining in the summer. A place for folks to gather, talk, eat, drink, and party. The Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in the heart of Roxbury. More information at oldmillroxbury.com. WIOX is supported by Crea, a store designed as a source for sustainable artisanal products, including Crea's own jewelry made from reclaimed metals and ethically produced goods to wear and share. Crea, K-R-I-A. On Main Street in Margaretville. More information at KreaJewelry.com. WIOX is supported by Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville. Warming home since 1980. Details at MountainFlame.com.
Hello, I'm Robert Steed, host of Uncompromising Music, Sunday mornings at 7 and Monday afternoons at 2, right here on WIOX Roxbury. Community radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXradio.org.
He walks through the corn leading down to...
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have a guest on, Paul Misko. How's it going, Paul?
How's it going, Ryan? Good to be back.
Yeah, spring has sprung. Pulled my taps out of the trees last week. So
I was going to ask how your tapping and sapping was going.
Tapping and sapping went well. When I saw you came to my house, it was, you know, they were running, but nothing crazy. And then they turned on it slightly after that.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't happy with how it was going.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting well over 2 gallons of sap per tap a day, mm-hmm. which is a lot. Ended up doing decent, that's for sure. So I can't complain.
Well, you could, and you did. But
I did.
Gotten better.
All right, fine. Yeah.
I remember, I think I told you that maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I tapped a couple of birch trees. Yellow
yeah.
birch, and they put out a lot of sap.
Oh, yeah.
But you need a lot of sap when you do birch, as you know. And I got, after all that tapping and sapping, I got 4 ounces of syrup.
Oh, really?
Well, I didn't tap a lot. But it was it was very good. I mean, I think the tree was putting out 4 gallons a day almost. It was just, it was under pressure. The plastic jug was like bulging, ready to pop. But it was good. It was a nice change of pace, a little different taste to it.
I tapped black birch a while ago, and I think they're like around 1% sugar content. But mm-hmm. They run like now after the maple trees
right.
do.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's what I remember.
A little
anyway.
Later. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. What else have you been up to before we get into the meat of the show?
I am very happy. Spring is here.
Yeah.
I hate winter. I wouldn't mind skipping winter and, well, maybe some snow for Christmas, but then the next day, 70 degrees.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. So I was happy to see the snow melt away and really happy to hear those peepers. I love those peepers.
Yeah.
So yeah. I got in a few good hikes recently, some at the John Burroughs Sanctuary where there's lots of water, lots of little ponds. And you had your wood frogs in one pond and the peepers in another, and a big fat owl flying around.
Where was this?
John Burroughs Sanctuary in West Park.
West Park. Is that town of Esopus? Or?
Yeah. And there's several good trails. And John Burroughs Cabin, slab sites is there.
Yeah.
So it's a nice place to go because the trails are kind of tangled. They're back and forth, and you weave around the woods. And I like going later, end of the day, into the evening, because that's when sometimes more wildlife shows up.
Yeah.
You hear more things. The peepers are usually quiet during the midday, but everything wakes up. And to see an owl on a branch is not easy, but we saw one sitting there in the gathering gloom, and it's nice experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Haven't been walking in the woods actually too much. Just pruning apple trees and getting into firewood, trying to replenish what I lost over the winter. So
yeah,
burn a lot of wood.
Yeah, there's one tree I took down. That's a big hickory tree, and I never did hickory before. Even the bark is hard on a hickory.
Yeah, you cut it down into.
It's down. I have to slice it up and
split
it, but that's hard wood. Wow.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember it being, it's a little stringy to split. I don't know. Ashes, people always say ash is easy to split. I find it very stringy. It's the stringiness when your hand's splitting that's the worst. You know, because it wants to split, but then it holds on, whereas oak just wants to split right off the bat.
Really?
Oh,
I've never done
great.
Oak.
Best.
Ash I always found easy, but hickory I haven't tried splitting yet. I did just cut the tree down and notice how, no surprise, hickory is very hardwood.
Yeah.
So always up to something, building furniture as usual.
Hmm.
And hope to take more hikes before the black flies come in. This is one of my favorite times of the year because the snow's gone, the leaves are off the trees, you could see more view.
Yeah.
And the black flies are not here yet.
Hmm.
And here's a tip I found very useful when they're black flies are out and bad, they always go for the eyes and the nose. you go to a hardware store, whatever, get some of those tight-fitting, clear plastic goggles. They're like $3.
Yeah.
And it keeps them out of your eyes, and it's a whole different experience because you're not constantly swatting and poking. And
yeah, they go right for the eyes.
Yeah, they love that. They bite you in the eye. So that's something that's coming real handy and made hiking in the spring more enjoyable.
So what do you got for us today? Well, tonight's topic is very old news of the Catskills,
very
right?
Very old news. But,
very old news.
I've got an announcement that the John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge Association is having an online auction starting tomorrow. And there's lots of good items. I put a couple woodwork items in there, and there's food, and there's overnight stays at places, and there's guided hikes. So if you look up John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge, you'll see a click on the auction, and there's some good stuff. And one thing I wanted to note is that I was watching one of those nature videos, and it showed, I never saw this before, I'm sure it's others knew all about it, but for me it was new to see a mother and two cubs had their den, overwinter den, in a tree.
Yeah.
Like 30 feet up in a hollow of a tree.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I know it's unusual, but I never heard of that before. But they showed the mother came out, and then the cubs, the first time they're walking around is they're 30 feet up on a branch.
Yeah.
And had to come down carefully, figure out how to do it. But I was just surprised they could spend the winter in a big hollow tree that high up.
Yeah, really. Yeah, and be insulated, I guess.
It was probably why it was on the video. It was, I think it was National Geographic or something, because it was unusual.
Huh. But yeah, they should be coming out here soon. I heard one of our members say they saw one near Kingston somewhere. But
yeah, I was wondering if they were out, but I still haven't seen any footprints or
anything. Actually, we did, now that we think about it. Now we just said that. We're pruning apple trees over in it was in Cooperstown. Saw footprints. Mm-hmm. Yeah, saw footprints of bears.
Okay.
Yeah, tracks. Yeah.
So they wake up at their own pace and
I guess. Yeah, I was up in the tree and I said, "What is that? That looks round over there." And someone was like, "I think it's just a deer track, you know." And then a guy was dragging brush over there and he said, "No, that's bear tracks."
You know? Yeah, it's always amazing to me how a huge 300-400-pound animal could find food in early spring. It just, you could see some of the rotten logs torn apart.
Yeah.
And to have a body that big living on little grubs and bugs.
Turning rocks over.
Yeah.
Yep.
Slim pickings till the fruit and berries and stuff come out.
Yeah, a lot of campfire fire rings. When I was a ranger, you'd see them all turned over from the bears.
Yeah. Well, at night when I sleep out in the woods, you could hear a thump, a bear out there, and these rocks thump, thump, flipping over.
Yeah.
And the next day you could see them. Usually they follow the trails. They're near the trail, so you could see rocks freshly turned over. And
yeah.
You know who's doing it, you know.
It's always nice to hear when you're sleeping, huh?
When you're trying to sleep.
Yeah, right.
So I've got, I brought a few old articles. As being a historian, you sign up for different things, and one of them was a newspaper online, and you could look up old papers. And I'm always amazed by how much you learn of the history of a place and of the people that doesn't get into the books. And it's quickly forgotten, except for they've archived these newspapers and digitized them. So some of the stories are funny, some fascinating, some disturbing.
Right.
But while we mentioned, I'll read a couple of the short ones. While we mentioned bears, this is J.H. Simpson. You know, you've met Jay. This would be his grandfather. And bear hunting was big sport in the Catskills as well as other places. But guys would come after the snow came because then they could track the bear. And they would spend sometimes 2-3 days, like Dutcher and Claude Yeary and others would spend 2-3 days on a bear hunt up and down the mountains following the bear tracks.
Dogs or?
It was also a way to, you know, get out of the house, do some drinking and camping out. You know, it was an expedition. But they really took it seriously. So here's one. Jay Simpson of Phoenicia was cornered in a bear's hole 5 years ago. Now, when I first read that, I thought, poor guy's in the bear den for 5 years. But apparently Jay was relaying the story where he had followed the bear. Five confronted him, and with his clothing stripped from his body and his body badly torn, he wounded the last of the quintet with the last shot of his five-caliber revolver, sufficient to allow him to escape. A little mistake here. I think I know the very gun that Jay Simpson used, and I think I shot the very gun Jay Simpson used. It's a five-cylinder, five-shot pepper box that Jay Simpson has. But apparently, I mean, the Simpsons are, you know, honest people. So it's
Now, what year was that, Paul?
This would have been, I don't have dates on all
late
of them.
Late 1800s, though?
This would have been early 1900s. I think this was around 1902.
You know, it's because the reason why I ask is I've been wondering about this, if the Catskills truly ever lost its bear population, the High Peaks.
Well, where'd they go? Because in the late 60s, 70s, you didn't see a bear at anywhere.
But still, I mean, people were either hunting them or saw them. Hunters I talked to in the High Peaks, in the very high, they weren't common by any means.
The DEC stats would reveal all, right?
I don't know about that. I mean, you know what? It's hard to get stats. I just asked them for deer, which is like the most tracked, monitored animal in New York State. It was hard to get old data.
Oh, okay.
I had to really press them to get it from till 1988. They didn't have it for WMU 3A, which is basically all of Slide Mountain Wilderness area.
Right.
I couldn't get it to the 1950s.
Huh. Yeah, it's there's one other story I read. 1890s in Woodland Valley, John Lord ran a boarding house there. And this guy from, they call a guy from the city, this dude from the city came up to, he was is like an engineer supposed to set up a sawmill up at the end of the valley, ahead of the valley. And he stayed over at Lord's house. And they said the next morning he wanted to go on a bear hunt. And he had all new stuff, you know, like a new gun, a new outfit. And here comes a city dude going out on a bear hunt. And, of course, everyone's chuckling behind his back saying, oh, this guy's, he's not going to get anything. Well, he shot a huge bear, and everybody was angry because this outsider, and John Lord wrote, he's quoted as saying, I've been living in this valley my whole life, and I never once saw a bear. Like, and this guy comes in one day, pops a big bear.
That's what I'm saying. They're very elusive. I mean, think about how many bobcats there are, and think about how many few you see. Think about how many coyotes there are.
Oh, yeah.
And how few you see.
Well, as you know, the trail camera tells all.
Yeah.
I set my camera up, and it's like they're like parading in front of it. It's amazing. Day and night.
Up there on the mountain.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, I remember that. But, yeah, I just wonder if the population was ever totally extirpated, because there's newspaper clippings and stories from the late 1800s into the early 1900s, which is really the peak of the decline of wildlife.
Right.
You know? But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, well, you don't have to digress. It's your show.
All right.
And then it's also interesting, they would do the bear hunt, but like to catch a cub was like this prize.
Yeah.
And it seems like they would keep the cub, you know, penned up or tied up for a few days, show it off. All the neighbors would come and look at it, you know.
Yeah.
And then they'd let it free, or, you know, somebody would free it and feed it and then free it or whatever. They didn't just, you know, kill the cubs. But
it was a different time, for sure.
This is in the newspaper. Three playful cub bears owned by William Dubois or Dubois at Big Indian attract much attention. They are playful and mischievous. I could imagine they are.
Yeah.
I think they're fun for like a week, and after they've destroyed everything they get into, they're not so much fun. And in the same paper, they have these little snippets. Huckleberry gatherers are numerous on High Point, and full baskets reward the labors of the pickers.
That's interesting, because High Point. People that where I frequent is West Shokan, and I stop at a place there and talk to some people who are much older than I am, and they all claim that you know, a lot of their ancestors burned High Point religiously for blueberries.
Right.
And there you go. There's a clipping on it, but yeah, it'd be interesting if you could find a clipping of someone saying there was a fire up there or stuff, you know?
Well, it's funny that a few years back, Jay Simpson and I share what we find, history of woodland and such, and he pulled up a bunch of articles about forest fires in the 1870s.
Yeah.
That swept huge paths up and down the mountains in the Shandaken area.
Mm-hmm.
And I checked with Mike Kudish about it, and he said he never knew that. And the reason he didn't know was because the state had no records, because this is before the Catskill Park was developed and started keeping records. But it explains why, when I look at old photos, 1890s, of the top of Terrace and even Wittenberg, it's like all dead trees with some new trees growing up in between.
Yeah.
So now it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. There's blueberries up there, too, on top.
Yeah. In one of John Burroughs' writings, he describes looking off of Wittenberg, and they could look down, down the side of the mountain, and see the path of the fire, the charred path, as it came up the mountainside. So these huge fires, they even had to, on railroad cars, bring men in from surrounding towns to fight the fires in Woodland Valley.
Yeah.
So that's how bad they were. But who knew? Unless you go to the old articles.
Yeah.
The state had no record of it.
And they're probably being lit on purpose, I would imagine, by some of them, maybe. Pickers, yeah.
But we had some terrible dry spells back in those days as well. But it's the newspaper articles that really bring to life more details.
That was the thing back then. I mean, the Shangham Ridge, or the Gunks, as some people might call them, is the king of that, where people are burning them religiously for blueberries. But I was hiking on my trip that I do every year in Slide Mountain Wilderness area. I'm starting, my map's starting to come together a little bit, but I mark down whenever I see charcoal. And a lot of areas that, if you were to look at, they don't have any oak. You can't even tell there's ever fire there. There's charcoal.
Right.
And now, lo and behold, I'm bushwhacking an area I've never been in, and I stumble across a little patch of mountain laurel.
Huh.
And I'm like, what the hell? And it's in the middle of the forest preserve. And that was, you know, mountain laurel needs fire.
Right.
So this was established. Interesting.
Yeah. You know? I used to find charcoal when I bushwhack up the side of Wittenberg to a lookout point. And as you're younger, you think, oh, somebody had a campfire here. But then there's charcoal here, charcoal here, charcoal here.
Yeah.
And then when I read about these fires that swept up and down these very mountains, it's like, ah.
Yeah.
Now it makes
sense. Well, when you look off of Wittenberg, you see those balds.
Yeah.
They may have been expanded at one time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know. You may be just seeing where it burned the hottest are those where the very remnants of those, where the balds are, you know?
Right. And a giant ledge was another place people would go for the day, bring a picnic, pick huckleberries.
Huh.
And there were always bears up there, the stories were, because that's where their berries were. And now it's so shaded out, there's hardly any.
There's hardly any,
berries left. Same with Terrace. That's a little better, but it still slowly gets shaded out.
Yeah.
But at one time, that was good pickings. And who knows if somebody lit a fire now and then.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Whoops, you know.
You got to remember, I mean, back then, you know, before the 40s, before refrigeration became widespread, that's why people burned, because blueberries just weren't shipped around as much.
Right.
They had buyers go up above on the Shangham Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Buyers from New York City to buy blueberries from these huckleberry fires.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Sure.
But anyway.
So I've got a couple more articles here about in Woodland Valley, there was a tannery, the Snyder's Tannery. He called it the Woodland Tannery, which is why it's called Woodland Valley. And the tannery closed down, and somebody else bought it and set up a barrel factory. And I knew that, you know, that was on some other maps. It's written in barrel factory. nothing exciting about that. But then I found articles about what kind of barrels they were making. And here, a number of New York capitalists have formed a company and are establishing their works in Snyder Hollow for the purpose of manufacturing barrels for flour, sugar, etc. The entire sides of the barrel are to be made of a single stave. Those staves are made from a section of log, cut of the length of the barrel, thoroughly steamed, and placed in a powerful machine which shaves it into a long ribbon. So the sides of the barrel were one solid shaving of wood, like a veneer, like a piece of veneer.
Really?
They'd steam the log, shave a length of wood off, and so it's not barrel staves, as many staves put together
right.
with hoops. It was one continuous roll of wood.
Why?
It was a quicker way. Think about it.
I mean,
to just shave it off one after the other.
Wow.
Like the unrolling of a piece of wallpaper. That's how the wood came off of this log. This ribbon wood is then cut into sections, and gores are taken out on either end to make the bilge, and hooped and headed. They still had to put hoops on for strength. And the Snyder Hollow One Stave Barrel Factory, another article, is in successful operation. It makes flour, sugar, salt, cement, and lime barrels. The machinery has a capacity of 4,500 barrels per day.
Jeez.
So that factory, which was a tannery originally, converted. They had an engineer come in, set up this machine, steaming logs and shaving them down and making barrels out of these strips of wood.
Amazing.
So that's
wonder what kind of wood. Wonder.
I imagine...
hardwood? Or
well, what they use? They'd use... What trees would be big enough? Maple? I guess ash.
Yeah.
Hemlocks were gone, pretty much.
Because it probably doesn't matter. It's probably waterproof when it's that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, white oak is what they use for staves.
Well, for
barrels.
Cement, flour. I mean, it seemed like it was all dry goods.
Yeah, dry goods. Gotcha.
And then this little snippet in the paper that goes with these articles on the factory. The whistle of a steam sawmill in Snyder Hollow gives a business air to that locality. Well, it's kind of a sawmill in a way, but that's what they're talking about, is there was apparently the whistle blow at the end of the shift, the beginning.
Yeah.
And it felt like a industrious town in Little Woodland Valley.
Jeez. Things change.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Very Old News with Paul Misko.
It sounds like a poor man's topic. Very old news.
That is very old
Nothing
news.
To see here. Here's a couple more bits. This is 1880s. Two men killed. We learned from a private correspondent that two fatal accidents occurred in the town of Shandaken last week in a neighborhood of Colonel Snyder's tannery. On Thursday, a man was killed instantly by the felling of a tree near where he was standing. On Saturday, another man was seriously injured by the upsetting of a heavy log on a sled, that he died in a few hours after the accident. The first left a wife and six children. So all this, as you know, log business is dangerous work.
Yeah.
And even with the Bluestone, too, there were many accidents that you see in these papers of wagons overturning, animals getting out of control, you know, and just running over people.
Right.
For all the charm of looking back on this life, and there were a lot of good things, it was a rough world to live in.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Here's another accident. The roundout stage, this is again 1870s, this is the roundout stage, which left that place on the arrival of a boat from New York on Saturday afternoon, upset on the dugway near Simpson's Tannery in Shandaken about 11 o'clock that night, and turned three or four times over before reaching the bottom. This is a carriage. This is a horse and carriage thing. Three or four times before reaching the bottom, the coach was full at the time, but we understand that no one was seriously hurt.
Amazing.
Wow. Every movie I saw where the stagecoach overturned, somebody got seriously hurt. So they were lucky. Another snippet. A mineral spring has been found on the farm of Mr. Davis Ryder, about 1 mile west of Simpson's Tannery on the Ulster and Delaware Plank Road. The principal mineral substances held in solution by the water are iron and sulfur. These, it is said, make the water of great value in certain forms for disease. I don't think so. Water, I mean, iron and sulfur in your water is the worst thing.
That's what I have.
I know. It's lousy. It smells like rotten eggs.
That's what I got.
It stains until everything.
It goes away the more I run it. But
clogs the pipes.
I got plenty of iron in the water.
Yeah, nobody's wanting iron and sulfur. But these were different times.
Well, I guess what everyone had spring water, maybe no well water. Maybe they wanted that.
Well, they thought sulfur water was good to drink.
That was like a big deal back then, right? I mean,
they'd
I used to go to Saratoga Springs.
They'd bottle it and sell it.
Yeah, my ex-girlfriend, and that was like a big deal back then, huh?
Sure. The worse it tastes, the better for you it was, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Amazing. It's always funny hearing how tastes have changed like that, too. Yeah. They talk about how tasty bear meat is when the hunters bring it in.
Yeah.
And
I like bear meat.
I mentioned to you, yeah, I've never had bear. I've had whale, but not bear.
Bear, my wife, I didn't tell her, but I was serving some meat, and she assumed it was venison. She ate it all, and this was like 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
She ate it all, and she's like, man, that is really good. This is like the best venison you've ever cooked. And I'm like, well, it's not venison.
Who wouldn't want a bear
burger?
Bear
meat. And it's just... It's pretty good, but it was a young bear, so I can't say whether an older bear tastes better or worse.
And here's a couple of funny articles I think about the kids of the time. Again, sometimes you get the impression that the kids back then were well-behaved, and to a degree, in some ways, they were better behaved. But here's a couple articles talking about in the schools. Since corporal punishment, this is Kingston, 1880s. Since corporal punishment has been abolished in the schools uptown, there is no living with the smaller children. To threaten them with being sent to their parents, they care nothing about. And where a touch or two with the whip would keep perfect order, the absence of the whip creates perfect bedlam. The moral influence of corporal punishment seems to be very great with the children.
Jesus. You can't even get these kids off a cell phone, man, let alone.
I know kids that weren't spanked enough. You know, we all know.
Yeah. If you're tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. And tonight's topic is very old news with Paul Misko.
Here's another one on the kids, which I think is funny. Lung testers is the name of it. For about 1 hour, this is in Kingston, of course, 1874. For about 1 hour each afternoon, John Street uptown might be called the bedlam of the city. For when number 11 school is adjourned, the children do nothing but exercise their lungs coming from that place until they reach Wall Street. There seems to be some infection in the air on this street to make the children scream, for we have seen a bevy of small girls stand still in the middle of the walk and shriek for several minutes without any apparent cause whatever. Now, some folks might say this was good for the health of these small boys and girls, and we always thought it was well to give full sway to the exuberance of spirits, but we have noticed that these children, that is invariably the fat, healthy-looking ones that are the most quiet, while the lean ones are those that make the most hideous uproar. Here's a question for a philosophologist or physiologist. So these kids did weird things. There's also articles about them throwing stones back and forth at each other across the streets in Kingston. occasionally hitting a pedestrian.
Oh, yeah.
And
could see that.
There's also a lot of brutal crimes that took place, often involved with drunkenness. You know, somebody was drunk and beat up somebody and ended up in jail. But there were some places that were dangerous to hang out, certain drinking, gambling, you know, places that you could go and put your life at risk. He's like, they'd say, like, everybody knows not to go to that place, but he did and got beat up and his wallet taken and whatever. So,
yeah,
some news is not so old. Let's see. We've got, this is a nice tidbit for a historian. You know, in Slide Mountain, most people know about the metal fire tower that was there. I think it went up in the 30s, taken down in maybe 68 or so.
Oh, that recent, huh?
Yeah. But there was one there before that in 1912.
The wooden one, right?
A wooden one. Not too tall, of course. And what people don't realize, it had a telephone.
Get out of town.
Yeah, really. And I have a couple of photos of that small fire tower with some hikers hanging out on it. But you could see the telephone line come down off of it, and it goes into a box on a pole, and then the wire goes all the way down along the truck trail, the wide gravelly road trail.
Jeez.
And so sure enough, here's an article about it. This is from the area that these articles are from is from Branch, which was a tiny post office town on
West Branch, never
seen. Yeah, near Frost Valley. It was there were all these little tiny towns, like 2 miles big in the olden days. And this is the Branch News. September 16th, the telephone from Marvin Van DeMark's house at Winnisook and Slide Mountain Summit was entirely completed on Friday. And anyone could telephone from Winnisook to Slide by calling at Van DeMark's. So they had a telephone in 1913 from the top of Slide, and you could connect from Van DeMark's to down lower, you know. But it was meant for the fire ranger. But just the idea that
that's amazing.
You could make a phone call then you couldn't again for years and years. And then
now you can.
There you go.
Now you probably get 5G up there.
First call would have been to order a pizza to the summit.
Yeah, right. Some guy with a suit and tie comes up and delivers it to you. They used to hike with suit and ties, right, Paul?
Oh, they did. And the women in the long dresses and hats with a bow and a feather.
How do they do that?
Slowly.
Slowly.
They were actually quite good hikers. They would hike up to Slide from Woodland Valley, which is a rough trail. I did that once on snowshoes and report. We went on a hike, 4 feet of snow on the top. We were in our snowshoes and bundled up and went up for the day. Sometimes they would camp out. It's 15 degrees, they wrote, stay overnight. And this is 1906, 1908. They didn't have the equipment we have today.
No way.
They'd think nothing of it.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of life was misery. And so
you think about how much more they're outside. You get acclimatized. It's like that dog that's never left outside.
Yeah.
And then it goes outside and it's cold, starts limping.
You know? Right.
I've seen people's dogs do
that. And there was a thing of challenging and surviving, you know, so they could all say, hey, we camped out on Slide in the winter. It was something to, you know, give a brag about and fun.
Perseverance, man.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Very Old News with Paul Misko. you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is very old news with Paul Misko.
Very old news.
Very old news.
That just doesn't sound right.
This isn't news from the 80s, 1980s. This is like news from like the early 20th century, 1880s.
You want fresh news, see Ryan. You want old news, talk to Paul.
Talk to Paul. He's got the old news.
Hey, it's old news you haven't heard, though. That's the twist.
That's right. No.
Hey, some other juicy tidbits. I don't know how juicy they are. They're over 100 years old, but... Just one name. Some of the funny names come up in the old papers that people actually were named. Here's one. It's getting married. Jane Coyne, C-O-I-N. There's a Cash Dollar was a name.
Cash
in
Dollar?
In Woodstock, yeah. And we have on the bottom of the page, this is 1857, September 12th. By the Reverend H.C. Longyear at his residence in Shandaken, John Burroughs of Roxbury, Delaware County, married to Ursula North of Olive.
Yeah, which wife was that?
That's his only wife.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he had others.
He had a girlfriend, but he only had one wife.
I got it.
To the end, yeah.
All right.
And he was 20. And he was teaching school that morning, and then he had to walk several miles to the wedding to get married and then walk back home because he was staying in one of the school members' houses.
Yeah.
So his wife went back to her family house in Olive, and he went back to his house he was boarding at. But he had to walk several miles to get married and then walk back to where he was teaching.
Jeez.
And his parents didn't even go to the wedding because they thought he was too immature and young to get married. And
well,
which he was.
She was.
His wife-to-be insisted he had long hair before the wedding. She insisted he cut his hair before or she won't marry him, so he cut his hair. It's funny just seeing these tidbits. 1857. Not a terribly happy marriage, but... It made history. Work has been suspended for a short time on the Woodland Valley Road, 1911. In 1927, they straightened out the worst parts of Woodland Road and then started paving it.
Yeah.
But it's fun to see the old photos of these dirt roads in all these valleys with the narrow wagon tracks in them from the iron-rimmed wheels.
Yeah.
And you realize what a bumpy ride. And plank roads, you had the plank road went from Kingston all the way. Oh, where'd it go? Margaretville? I mean, and they planked it wherever it was rough or boggy. They didn't plank the whole road. So when you hear about a plank road, it was only planked in the worst spots, hemlock planks like 3 inches thick.
Really?
Because there were plenty of hemlock trees cut for the tanning industry. Yeah. And as you know, hemlock lasts a long time. Out in the open, getting wet and everything.
Hmm.
And a little humorous crime. A gypsy woman stole $5 bill from James Ryan's coat pocket on Saturday.
$5? That's a lot of money, man.
James Ryan, R-I-O-N, on 214 around Silver Hollow, there's Ryan Road.
Yeah.
I bet that's the Ryan.
$5 is a lot of money back
then.
That's
right. Gypsy woman stole $5 bill from James Ryan coat pocket. But on being questioned in regard to the theft, she gave it up. So she did take it.
And it says
the 4th of July passed off quite pleasantly and quite quietly at this place. It surely was safe and sane, implying that they had some crazy 4th of Julys back there. Maybe the fireworks got out of control, burned down someone's barn.
Right.
Oh, and here's another funny one. This is with Jim Dutcher, or Charles Dutcher, a relative. Charles Dutcher got in with a crowd Tuesday night, and his money had been passed around among them. Later, he became intoxicated, and the money was not returned to him. An investigation was made, and it was found that Dutcher had been playing pinochle with Bob Freer and others. The stakes, according to the latter, was $50 a game. That's a lot.
How much?
$50 a game.
$50 in what year?
This is 1906.
It seems like a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
High rollers.
And Dutcher lost $170 out of $200, which he had. And then so Dutcher gets a lawyer, Francis Merritt, and after negotiating for a time with the gamblers, Dutcher received $75 and returned home. So a lot of drinking and gambling and passing your money around, not a good idea. David Larkin has gone to Slide Mountain, where he has secured work at Winnisook Lodge. Now, you might say, well, that doesn't... Who's David Larkin?
Isn't there a Larkin farm on Woodland Valley? I don't know.
Yeah, there was the Larkin farm on Woodland Valley, dairy farm mostly. Now, John Burroughs tried to climb Slide Mountain in 1884 with Ernest Ingersoll, another writer. For some crazy reason, they decided to go up the face of Wittenberg, the eastern face, the very steep, led by a farm boy from Boysville. And it took them all day. They got up there 2 p.m. to Wittenberg, and their plan was to go then to Cornell and then Slide. That was his first attempt to slide.
Yeah.
Well, they were tuckered out, and it was very cold. It was August, but very cold. They spent the night on Slide, Wittenberg, unprepared. Came down into Woodland Valley. He fell in love with Woodland Valley. The next year, he gets some friends, 1885, and decides to go try to climb Slide from Woodland Valley. Now, the easiest way is from Winnisook.
Right.
But he knew about that, but he wanted to do it from Woodland Valley. So they camped out the next morning. He says, we were led by a young man, David. It's David Larkin.
Hmm.
And he led them most of the way. And then Burroughs and his friends continued up onto Slide and spent a couple days. And this is the same David Larkin a little later. And I always like to think if David realized how famous he became for leading that group. He got mentioned in Burroughs' book and forever memorialized in that.
Yeah.
And then you could see from census and newspaper clippings, David worked around. He worked at this place. He worked at this farm, just a laborer. When he was 32, he's working in Kingston by the railroads, gets run over by a coal train.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
What a sad end. But he had his 15 minutes of fame.
32 years old, huh?
So I guess coal is unhealthy after all.
Yeah.
And these newspapers are funny. They would mention so-and-so is visiting so-and-so, and somebody took a walk, you know. Just the most minute things they mentioned, like friendly gossip, not nasty.
Right.
There's a good, funny story here that I'm going to read about a bear incident. And let's see. Oh, here it is. Kingston Freeman, 1886. The Kingston Freeman says that three young women who live at Snyder Hollow, town of Shandaken, Woodland Valley,
yep,
Ulster County, had a thrilling experience the other afternoon, which they are not likely to forget very soon. They had been calling at a neighbor's and were returning home, with them being a large dog. While walking along the road, they discovered a large bear loping along close behind them. They immediately gave a scream and started on a run. The worst thing to do. The bear followed on behind them. For nearly a mile, the chase continued, and then the bear left the road going into the woods. The women were terribly frightened and claimed they had a narrow escape from either being badly hurt or killed by the bruin. The dog, they say, on seeing the bear, disappeared and was not seen since.
Right. So much for the dog, huh?
Yeah. So I know who these people were and where they went from. They went from their relatives up the road in Woodland Valley, from the beach house down to the Botchford place. But it's funny. Let out a scream and ran. That's that's the exact opposite. And there were a lot of, there's also records I see of how many people had sheep and livestock eaten by not just bears, but wild dogs were a big problem.
Really?
They'd have bands of wild dogs that would be harassing people's livestock, grabbing them, eating them, tearing them to bits. There's, I don't know if it's, we always heard about these dogs, wild dogs mixing with coyotes.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, that was the big talk. What do you know about that?
I don't know. Not to say it's never happened, but I don't, there's been a lot of DNA now with that.
And
there's very little dog DNA as far as I could, as far as they could tell.
They were calling.
We've had people on the show talk about this. There's a guy from the New York Museum, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about that DNA analysis. But it wasn't as much as they thought. They think it's more rural legend, but I think there was some, though.
Yeah, they called
them
coy.
But it's so long ago, you can't say. Coy dogs?
Coy dogs, yeah.
I don't know.
That would have made a great T-shirt.
I don't remember, though.
Yeah.
There's like 3% wolf in the eastern coyote that is documented.
Huh.
Because as they went north around the Great Lakes,
right,
they did breed. It's a very homogenous population going back to one, like, female. It's very,
wow.
It's not a very diverse gene pool is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I always think of those,
that's why it's bigger than the western.
Right. Variety. Like, way up in the head of a lot of these valleys, like in Woodland, there's these pools where the pools are almost landlocked because the water goes underground after the pool, and it's got some brookies in them, brook trout.
Yeah.
And it's been like the same population of trout.
Yeah.
For years and years. And you almost want to, I need like a, you know, $50,000 grant to study the genetics of.
That's been done, though.
It has?
Well, we had a guy on the radio show from University of Albany, and he did a genetic study on South Hollow Brook, which is, you know, not as remote as some of the streams you've been on.
Yeah.
It's unique.
Okay.
Even to that place. Within the Catskills, it's unique.
Right.
So what you're describing has got to be. It just hasn't been documented.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
You know? But we got about 10 seconds left.
All right. Hey, thanks. And don't forget the John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge auction.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on again, Paul. Talking about very old news. I thought it was interesting. And definitely like to do it again. I don't know. Makes for good conversation. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Next week is Peter Gentsch from the Hudson Valley Lab to answer some of your questions you might have about you know, caring for your apple trees, especially with pest issues. All right, have a good night.
From the forest, his tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful
children at the games, in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. With a mighty roar, the big jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more.